Well, welcome to Congressman Mondaire Jones of New York's 17th District. Congressman, thank you so much for showing up. We really appreciate it, and I think a lot of people want to hear what you have to say. You sort of become one of the leaders of the caucus, of the progressive caucus in the Congress. What's that like?
It is always a pleasure to be here. Let me start by saying it. It's the honor of my life to represent the people of New York's 17th Congressional District. And if folks outside of the district want to view me as a leader as well, then I'm doubly honored in that respect. I am really proud to be a champion of the people. And we've got overlapping crises, as you know. So to be one of the progressive champions in Congress and to be recognized as such is a dream. It is one that I didn't think was possible, as you know, just a few years ago. But here we are. We've gotten a great start.
So you just introduced a bill to expand the size of the Supreme Court. That's raised a lot of eyebrows. Why'd you do it?
Our democracy is hanging by a thread. And as we are seeing the voter suppression attempts being made now in 43 different states, hundreds and hundreds of bills being attempted, some already signed into law, like SB 202 in Georgia, we must make the observation that the Supreme Court has been an accomplice. The Supreme Court has been dismantling our democracy for years. Take the 2013 decision in Shelby v. Holder, a case where the opinion was written by Chief Justice John Roberts, striking down the heart of the Voting Rights Act, which then allowed for that bill in Georgia years later to become law. That same court, years before that, in 2010, decided Citizens United, an opinion deeply unpopular with the American people, and for good reason, because it invited a torrent of unlimited corporate spending in our elections, another distortion of our democracy. And so I view, and many others view, court expansion as being necessary to save our democracy. This is not about Republicans or Democrats. Justices John Paul Stevens and David Souter were Republicans, and they were appointed to the bench by Republican presidents. But that's not true today of the Supreme Court. They don't rule in support of the fundamental right to vote in the way that the two gentlemen who I just described did. Instead, you've got a 6-3 far-right supermajority, hostile to democracy itself. And I would also add that the size of the Supreme Court has been changed 7 times in our nation's history by Congress. And so this is an idea that is deeply rooted in the American tradition.
You are, of course, right. I don't know what any other way to put it. But it does come down to strategy, doesn't it? You've got a president who seems to say, wait, not so fast. You've got a speaker, your own speaker in the House of Representatives, who seems to be dragging her heels on this one. And you've got a Senate, which is likely not to pass this. How do you handle all that?
Well, I think people have not been paying as close attention as they should to what the speaker said yesterday. She said she had no plans, you know, at the time to have a floor vote on this. And my goodness, as one of the authors of this legislation, I'm glad she said that, because I haven't had a chance to speak to most of my colleagues about this. We just introduced the legislation yesterday, and already we've got so many co-sponsors, and that number is ticking upwards. As we engage one member of the House of Representatives after another. Of course, this is historic legislation. The size of the court hasn't been changed since the year 1869. And I want to have conversations with my colleagues and rally support for this bill before getting a floor vote on it. I would have been shocked if she had said something different than what she said yesterday. And of course, I say this as a member of the Democratic House leadership team. But one of the great things about this bill is that the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Jerry Nadler, is also a leading co-author of this. So, too, the chair of the subcommittee on the courts, a committee that I vice chair. And the president, for his part, has convened a commission for the purpose of studying court reforms. I don't think that that commission is necessary. I think the conclusion is obvious. We must expand the court to save our democracy. But I think the fact that he even convened such a commission means that he recognizes that something's got to give.
So what about the Senate itself, 50-50, the land of no? Is there a possibility that what you're doing here is a strategy to make the court sit up and take notice and say, hey, we can't do what we've been doing?
It's an interesting point that you raise. You know, it reminds me of FDR threatening or proposing to expand the court, and a hostile Supreme Court majority that had been striking down economic New Deal legislation,
yep,
which we all take for,
yep,
granted today, you know, immediately changing its tune and upholding that legislation. But I've got to tell you, I'm serious about this. This isn't just rhetoric. We must expand the court. The same court that struck down the heart of the Voting Rights Act in 2013 and that decided the Citizens United case is more conservative today than it was even then, due to the confirmation, for example, of Justice Amy Coney Barrett. So I'm quite serious about this, and so too are my colleagues in the House. As it concerns the Senate, you also raise a good point. We've got to repeal the filibuster for a number of reasons, not least of which court expansion, which I view to be necessary to ending Jim Crow once and for all, as we see the resurgence of Jim Crow in places like Georgia, now is being attempted in Texas. These terrible, terrible voter suppression attempts, explicitly at this point, I think, for the purpose of disenfranchising black and brown and working and young people and elderly people as well, who have trouble getting to the polls, who might have trouble using a voter ID, for example, to vote by mail. I mean, my goodness. And when I hear my colleagues in the House on that House floor, many of them aren't even saying it's something other than what I'm describing. So we are reaching a breaking point. And I worry that if we don't expand the court soon, and by the way, that if we don't pass the For the People Act, H.R. 1, and the Senate, S-1, we will lose our democracy for at least a generation. We've got one of the major political parties, that party being the Republican Party, whose project is to disenfranchise people because it cannot compete on the merits of its policy ideas. The American Rescue Plan passed with 80% of the American people supporting it, and not a single Republican in the House or the Senate supporting that. And this is COVID relief. My goodness.
That was the last thing I was going to ask you on this subject, which is, have you spoken to a single Republican who says, I'm with you?
Good luck in this environment. You know, I read that if you can't vote for, well, first of all, if you can't vote for COVID relief, if you can't vote to produce vaccines for the American people and to get us out of the worst public health crisis since the Spanish flu in the 1900s, then, well, first of all, why are you in Congress? But also, I take a dim view of the willingness of my Republican colleagues to engage in good faith on this stuff. You know, there are some exceptions. I'm proud to have introduced the SALT Deductibility Act, which would immediately, if enacted, put thousands of dollars back into the pockets of people throughout New York State. In my district, in Westchester and in Rockland, 43% of the households in my congressional district saw their taxes immediately go up when Donald Trump and Republicans in Congress capped the SALT deduction at $10,000. And I do have some Republican friends on that bill, but, you know, even they did not vote for the American Rescue Plan.
Monday Jones, I wonder if you would just take a minute, because that's all we have in this particular break, to tell us about the agreement to decommission Indian Point.
This is an historic decommissioning, and it is one that activists should rightfully be cheering, and that people in my district, which includes Indian Point, should rightfully be cheering. We've had a number of issues with approvals that have been made, you know, gas lines running basically across the premises on a nuclear facility, for those who don't know what Indian Point is. And so on and so forth. It's also, I think, appropriately viewed as quite dangerous to be living nearby. And so it is something that the Attorney General has been showing leadership on. My office, I'm proud to say, which obviously succeeded Nita Lowey, who also was showing leadership on this issue, has been very active in this. And I will be very pleased when this is all done. And then we'll have to talk about what to do with the nuclear waste that will be at that facility.
Indeed, we will. Mondaire Jones, I'm very impressed with everything you said to me. I don't like to talk to guys I completely agree with, but thank you so much for being with us today. When we come back, I want to get some ideas about what you as a new member of Congress are thinking about the culture down there.
Sounds good.